Wait a minute, this sounds like rock and or roll.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ. On the next few episodes, I plan on examining the amazing Sunset Strip rock scene in LA and how it evolved from an innovative and inspired hard rock scene in the 70s on through the birth, sort of American heavy metal, and how the glam aspects of that Sunset Strip metal scene really took hold and the Sunset Strip scene became a sort of glam metal mecca in the late 80s and early 90s. Bands and band members, it was like a pilgrimage from all over the country. They came to LA, they came to the Sunset Strip to be in a band, to make it, to get that record deal, get on MTV. You know, Poison came to LA from Pennsylvania as a fully formed band. Izzy Stradlin and Axl Rose came to LA from Indiana. Janie Lane came to L.A. from Ohio. Stevie Rochelle from Tough came to L.A. from Wisconsin. The Rock City Angels came to L.A. from Florida. It goes on and on. They came from all across the country to the Sunset Strip to be a part of what was happening. But how did that Sunset Strip rock scene come to be? Well, the Sunset Strip is a mile-and-a-half stretch of Sunset Boulevard that passes through West Hollywood, California. The Strip actually lies outside of the Los Angeles city limits, but it's a part of Los Angeles County. But this meant that the Sunset Strip, that mile-and-a-half stretch of Sunset Boulevard, was not under the jurisdiction of the infamous LAPD, but rather the Sheriff's Department. And as I've read it described, there was a relaxed attitude toward law enforcement. And that's why so many bars and clubs sprung up along that mile-and-a-half stretch of Sunset Boulevard that became known as the Sunset Strip. And those bars and clubs and various establishments became the go-to spots, the places to be seen for the rich and famous all the way back to the 30s and the 40s. Movie stars hung out there. Organized crime got involved. By the 60s, the music scene started to take over and the Sunset Strip was becoming a tourist destination. And you know, Hugh Hefner opened a four-story Playboy Club in the mid-60s on the Sunset Strip. The West Hollywood Hyatt Hotel, which became known as the Riot House, was on the Sunset Strip, and that was where touring bands would stay and raise hell. A lot of famous stories came out of the Riot House. The famous Tower Records on the north side of Sunset Boulevard opened in 1971, and a lot of band members from these various bands worked at Tower Records over the years. It closed down in 2006. And the world-famous Comedy Store opened on the Sunset Strip in 1972. And a lot of famous comedians came out of the Comedy Store in the 70s and 80s especially. But what about the rock scene, the Sunset Strip rock scene? Well, there were a series of clubs that opened through the 60s and 70s that became home base for all of these bands and gave them a place to play. And, you know, the scene revolved around these clubs that were all on this stretch of Sunset Boulevard. The Troubadour opened in 1957, and it was originally a center for folk music in the 60s and home to the scene that launched the Byrds, Carole King, James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, later Linda Ronstadt, Jackson Browne, the Eagles. The Whiskey A Go-Go opened in 1964, and was founded by Elmer Valentine, who was also involved in opening the Rainbow and the Roxy. And the Whiskey A Go-Go was important in launching the careers of rock bands, 60s rock bands like Love, The Doors, and then Frank Zappa. Whiskey A Go-Go was also a huge club for Motley Crue, and a lot of touring bands who came through L.A. would play at the Whiskey A Go-Go through the 70s and 80s. Gazzari's opened in 1967 and shut down in 1993. And the Key Club is now on that spot. but Gazzari's was a huge club for the 70s and 80s rock scene on the Sunset Strip. The famous Rainbow Bar and Grill opened in 1972 on the Sunset Strip. Rodney Bingenheimer's English Disco was on the Sunset Strip from 1972 to 1975. Rodney Bingenheimer had lived in London for a while and was exposed to that European glam rock scene that I did an episode about early on. And he tried to import that European glam scene to the U.S., but it didn't really take hold. Glam was sort of a different animal in the United States. The Roxy opened in 1973, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show actually launched out of the Roxy in 1974. And the Starwood was open from 1973 to 1981. And the Starwood was a huge club for the rock scene, but it was also sort of ground zero for the LA punk scene in the early 80s. Black Flag, The Germs, X, The Dickies, The Go-Go's, Fear, The Circle Jerks. So it was really all of these clubs in that mile and a half stretch of Sunset Boulevard that really made that rock scene possible. But most importantly, it was about the bands that came to the Sunset Strip and created that scene. And there were two bands in the 70s that were vitally important to the explosion, the hard rock explosion on the Sunset Strip. Two bands with two innovative guitarists, but two very different bands. You had Van Halen, whose music was driven by their guitar player, Eddie Van Halen, and his innovative, unique, highly original, and highly influential guitar style. And then you had Quiet Riot, who their music was driven by the pop song structure. And you could almost say that Randy Rhoads, their guitar player, was held back. And really, you know, he really shone later on when he joined Ozzy Osbourne's band. But those two bands, Van Halen and Quiet Riot, and those two guitar players, Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads, really built the foundation for the Sunset Strip rock scene that exploded in the 80s and into the early 90s. The Van Halen brothers were born in the Netherlands, and their family moved to the United States in 1962, and by 1972, they'd formed a band which they originally called Genesis. It was the two Van Halen brothers and a bass player named Mark Stone. But by 1974, Stone had been replaced by Michael Anthony, and the band had recruited a vocalist. Before that, Eddie Van Halen had been singing and playing guitar. But by 1974, they had a lead singer named David Lee Roth, and Genesis had become Mammoth, and then by 1974, they became known as Van Halen. And Van Halen originally broke into the rock scene as a cover band. And here's an example. This is Van Halen performing probably my favorite song off Led Zeppelin's double album, Physical Graffiti, a song called The Rover. And this performance is probably from 1974 or 1975. Thank you. what's interesting to me about that recording is that, yes, Van Halen were a cover band at first and playing sets full of all or mostly covers, but when you listen to that recording, Eddie Van Halen is not trying to imitate Jimmy Page's guitar style. You can already hear Eddie Van Halen's signature sound. And David Lee Roth is not even close to trying to impersonate Robert Plant. He's already David Lee Roth. He's already doing all the famous yelps and squeals. And you can tell that all of that David Lee Roth personality is on full display. And even though they're performing a Led Zeppelin song, you can hear the originality and you can hear where this band is going. And let's hear where they went. This is Van Halen in 1977 performing an original song live at the Whiskey a Go-Go. And apparently, this is the only known recording to exist of this particular original Van Halen song.
This next song is dedicated to all of you then, because Franz is calling. Here's just what she wanted.
So that classic lineup of Van Halen was together by 1974, and in 1975, a band called Quiet Riot formed. Quiet Riot was made up of singer Kevin DeBrow, guitar player Randy Rhodes, bassist Kelly Garney, and drummer Drew Forsyth. And the band was huge on the Sunset Strip in the 70s. They had two albums, but they only came out in Japan in 1977 and 1978. For some reason, Quiet Riot were never able to land that elusive American record deal in the 70s, even though apparently they were almost signed to Casablanca Records at one point. Randy Rhodes was in the band all the way through 1979 before he jumped ship to Ozzy Osbourne's band. Here is Quiet Riot performing at the Roxy in 1979 with Randy Rhodes, unreleased song called Picking Up the Pieces. Thank you. Randy Rhoads was replaced in Quiet Riot by a guitar player named Carlos Cavazo, and Carlos Cavazo was in another band that was active on the Sunset Strip in the late 70s, a band called Snow. He was in the band with his brother Tony Cavazo, who went on to find some fame in the 80s with a band called Hurricane. And Snow also featured a singer-guitar player named Andrew Freeman and a drummer named Steven Quadros, and they released a 5-song EP in 1980. Another band that was a big deal on the Sunset Strip in the mid to late 70s was a band called The Boys, with a Z. The Boys were made up of guitar player George Lynch and drummer Mick Brown, who of course both ended up in Dokken in the 80s, and a singer named Michael White and a bass player named Monty Zufelt. Now, at some point, The Boys replaced singer Michael White with a singer named Greg Sanford, whose lookalike brother Rick Sanford was actually the singer in another Sunset Strip band called Legs Diamond, and I played that band on the American Glam episode of the show. And when they replaced Michael White with Greg Sanford, they changed the name of the band to Exciter. And if you're a fan of Dokken, you'll recognize this next song, late 70s recording by Exciter. Now, at the same time Exciter were playing a song called Paris is Burning on the Sunset Strip, there was also a band called Dokken active on the Sunset Strip. They'd originally formed as Airborne, but changed their name to Dokken, naming themselves after the lead singer guitar player in the band, Don Dokken. Dokken was a trio that also included drummer Greg Recca and bass player Steve Barry. And that version of Dokken actually put out a single in 1979, self-released single. I believe only 500 copies were pressed. So we're starting to see the roots of the 80s metal scene in these late 70s bands like Exciter and the original version of Dokken. And here's another example, a band called Mickey Rat that was formed in San Diego in 1978 by Steven Piercy. The band moved to LA in 1980, and at one point, Jake E. Lee, who would go on to replace Randy Rhoads in Ozzy Osbourne's band, was a part of Mickey Rat. By 1982, the classic Rat lineup was in place, and they'd shortened the name to just Rat. But here's a 1979 recording by Mickey Rat.
Watching you act, living from the day.
Another huge metal band on the strip in the 80s was a band called Wasp, and the roots of that band goes back to the mid-late 70s hard rock scene on the Sunset Strip as well. Guitar player Steve Duran actually replaced Johnny Thunders for a few shows in the New York Dolls at the very last gasp of the band. They were on tour in Florida, and the band was falling apart. And Johnny Thunders and Jerry Nolan, the drummer, had quit the band in the middle of the tour. And they found this local guitar player, Steve Duran, to fill in for the last few shows. And then Steve Duran ended up moving to L.A. with New York Dolls bass player Arthur Kane. And they formed a band called Killer Kane that was closer to a punk rock group. That band existed in 1975. By 1976, Steve Duran was on his own, formed his own band called Sister, with a guitar player named Randy Piper. And at some point, Nikki Sixx and Lizzie Gray, guitar player Lizzie Gray, who went on to form the band London, those two guys came in and out of Sister at some point. And Steve Duran eventually changed his name to Blackie Lawless. And Sister evolved into a band called Circus Circus, and then eventually became Wasp. But here is a late 70s recording by Sister. So I mentioned that Nikki Sixx, Lizzie Gray, and Blackie Lawless, all three of them were involved at some point in this band called Sister. and all three were later involved at some point in the inception of a band called London. But London eventually just became Lizzie Gray's band, and London went through a lot of different incarnations, and the band is sort of famous for members who came and went and then went on to find fame in other bands, while London languished back on the Sunset Strip scene. A very early version of London featured a singer, a British singer named Nigel Benjamin, and Nigel Benjamin was actually the guy who replaced Ian Hunter in Mott the Hoople, and they released two albums just as Mott. They shortened the name to Mott, and in 75 and 76, that band with Nigel Benjamin on vocals released two albums, and then somehow Nigel Benjamin ended up in L.A. on the Sunset Strip, and he wound up in this band London for a short period. And I'm going to play you a demo that London recorded with Nigel Benjamin in 1980, and you can hear how, you know, London originally were flirting with a sort of glam rock sound before they eventually morphed into a heavy metal band. It's very interesting to me to hear those two songs by Sister and London and hear how poppy they were, and to know that Blackie Lawless and Lizzie Gray were sort of pioneers in the 80s LA metal scene, but you can hear in the late 70s how poppy the music they were making was. And I think that's one of the major differences between a lot of American heavy metal and European heavy metal from the early 80s, mid 80s, is a different set of influences, for one thing, and more of a pop songcraft in the American version of heavy metal. Another good example of this early poppy sound would be a band called Rock Candy. While Nikki Sixx was working with Sister and London, future Motley Crue vocalist Vince Neil was working with this cover band, Rock Candy. And Rock Candy recorded a couple of originals as demos in 1979, but by this time, Vince Neil was already out of the group, and the singer on those demos, even though the demos are often credited to Vince Neil as a vocalist, the singer on the demos is actually Rock Candy guitar player Jeff Alverson. Here's an example. So then probably the most influential band on the eventual glam scene that exploded on the Sunset Strip would be a band called Motley Crue that formed in 1980. And all four members of Motley Crue were active on the Sunset Strip scene in the late 70s. Mick Mars even earlier. Guitar player Mick Mars, his real name is Bob Deal. And there's a podcast called Heavy Metal War Stories. I don't think there's been a new episode in about a year. But there's a great interview on Heavy Metal War Stories with a guy named Harry Clay, who was in bands in the 70s with Bob Deal, who became Mick Mars. And according to Harry Clay, at one point, Harry Clay himself came up with a band name. This would be like the mid-70s. He came up with a band name, Motley Crue, C-R-O-O. And he was in a band at some point with Bob Deal that was called Motley Crue. And it gets even better than that. The singer of that band that Bob Deal was in, Bob Deal who became Mick Mars, the singer of the band Motley Crue, her name, female singer, her name was Mickey Mars. So eventually, Bob Deal hooks up with these young kids forming this new band, and, you know, Harry Clay's not bitter about the name thing. He says in the interview that Bob Deal called him up, told him that they were going to use the name Motley Crue, and he wasn't using it for anything, and he was okay with it. It's just interesting that, you know, Mick Mars, Bob Deal, was in this band in the 70s called Motley Crue with a singer named Mickey Mars, and then he ends up in the band in the 80s, Motley Crue, and changes his name to Mick Mars. It's kind of funny. But, you know, Mick Mars was a very seasoned musician. I believe that a couple of the bands he was in with Harry Clay in the 70s were called White Horse and then Vendetta. But he played a lot of gigs all through the 70s and was a very seasoned musician. And the other guys in Motley Crue were just kids, you know. But, you know, Motley Crue became a huge deal on the Sunset Strip and really set the stage for what came next. Like I said, they formed in 1980. And here's an early live recording of Motley Crue performing an unreleased song called Running Wild in the Night.
Behind in the dark, but now, when you run love at night, never just say why. fear. Running free through the trash, they dress to kill. They don't know what they fear.
So now we're getting into that early 80s Sunset Strip heavy metal scene. Rick Fox was an early Kiss fan. He was at all of their early shows at the Coventry and the Hotel Diplomat and stuff. And he's quoted a lot in the new Kiss book, Nothing to Lose. Rick Fox ended up moving to LA. He was involved in Wasp early on. And he was in the band Steeler with Ron Keel and Yngwie Malmsteen that was signed to Shrapnel Records. He was on that first, the only Steeler album. And then he formed his own band called Sin.
We're Sin. We listen to KUCI 88.9 Irvine. Woo!
You
Another heavy metal band that was big on the strip in the early 80s that formed in the wake of Motley Crue and had a very similar image and sound to Motley Crue was a band called Witch. They formed in 1983, but they had their roots in that late 70s Sunset Strip scene as well. The bass player and guitarist in Witch were both in Circus Circus, which was Blackie Lawless's band between Sister and Wasp. Witch put out an EP in 1984 called The Hex Is On.
That's the way it's gotta be. Now I won't be home today. I'm sorry, it has to be this way. I had to take another name. Now change it quick. Now feel bewitched, get out of my way. Out of the night, in black I came. We all knew a name. We laid her down, an altar we made. Took to this deed, there's no other way. Well, I won't be home today. I'm sorry, it has to be this way. Now I had to take another name. Well, I'll change it quick. I feel bewitched, bewitched.
One more early 80s heavy metal band on the strip that had a very flamboyant, over-the-top glam image and were very influential on the over-the-top glam stuff that was going to come after them was a band called Carrie Doll. And they put out a 5-song EP also in 1984, the same year that the Witch EP came out. The Carrie Doll EP was called Till Death Do Us Part. Childhood friends Bill Bailey and Jeff Isbell moved to LA in the early 80s to get in on this Sunset Strip scene, ended up in a band called Hollywood Rose. The band formed in 1983 and recorded some demos in 1984.
Yeah.
So the saga of Hollywood Rose and LA Guns and how those two bands turned into Guns N' Roses is pretty convoluted and confusing. Axl Rose was in and out of LA Guns, and Tracy Guns was also in and out of Hollywood Rose, and eventually they combined the two names to make Guns N' Roses. Axl, before Hollywood Rose even formed, apparently Axl Rose was in LA Guns in 1983, but then he left the band, formed his own band called Hollywood Rose, was back in LA Guns, out again. At some point, you know, in between Axl's stints in LA Guns, the band actually recorded and released an EP with a different singer named Michael Yagos. Another band that was big on the strip in the early 80s that has sort of a connection to Guns N' Roses is a band called The Sharks. As the story goes, supposedly, a lot of people think Axl Rose lifted a lot of his stage moves and, you know, his serpentine dance and stuff from the Sharks singer Richard Black. The Sharks were a huge band on the strip, and they released a single and an album, and then they changed their name to Shark Island, had another record before signing to a major label and pretty much altering their sound. Here's a song by the Sharks from their 1982 album called Alter Ego. We'll be right back. So after various members going in and out of both bands, Hollywood Rose and LA Guns eventually combined to form a band called Guns N' Roses. And the original lineup of that band was Axl Rose, Tracy Guns, Izzy Stradlin, Ollie Beach, and Rob Gardner. And Tracy Guns eventually left Guns N' Roses and reformed his own band called LA Guns. And when he reformed LA Guns, he originally reformed the band with a singer named Paul Black. This was before Phil Lewis came on the scene. And my favorite version of LA Guns is that version with Paul Black. Another metal band that was big on the strip in the early mid-80s at sort of that midway point as Sunset Strip heavy metal was morphing into Sunset Strip glam metal was a band called Sweet Savage. And they were a band that came to the strip. They moved there from Dallas, Texas, and they put out a self-titled EP in 1985 that was produced by Dana Strum and actually sold 30,000 copies. And now we've arrived at the glam era on the Sunset Strip, and I'm going to explore that Sunset Strip glam metal scene on the next episode, maybe two. Probably the most famous band, glam metal band, to come out of that scene. Certainly not the best band, but probably the most famous and successful was a band called Poison. And they formed as Paris in Pennsylvania, and then moved to L.A., and it all worked out for them, you know? Except for original guitar player Matt Smith, who bailed on the band and moved back to Pennsylvania before they made it big. Here's a 1985 demo by Paris/Poison with Matt Smith on guitar.
We'll be right back.
Well, that's going to do it for part one on the Sunset Strip hard rock scene. Go to the blog, rockandorrollpodcast.blogspot.com. There's a link for the Facebook page. Go to the Facebook page and like the Facebook page. There's also a link at the blog for iTunes. Go to iTunes. Leave me a rating. Leave me a comment. The email address is at the blog, rockandorrollpodcast@gmail.com. Send me an email. Tell me who you are, how you found the show, what you'd like to hear on future episodes. I hope you enjoyed this one. The next one's going to be a lot of fun. Play a lot of my favorite poppy glam from the Sunset Strip. And now, to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with a song by Motley Crue from their very first single. Came out in May of 1981 on their own label, Leather Records. This was before Too Fast for Love. The A-side was a song called Stick to Your Guns, but I'm a much bigger fan of the B-side. Motley Crue, 1981. Song is called Toast of the Town. Until next time.